listening to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 AM K108.
Para più piano che nessuno sentirà il nostro amore rovinviamo il rioter. Nessuno sa la verità, neppure il cielo che ti guarda lassù. Insieme te lo resterò, amore mio, sempre così. Para più piano rivieni più vicini ora a me. Potrò sentire i grido schirmie dentro di te. Nessuno sa la verità, ero grande di amore, più grande resisterà. Insermire per io resterò, amore mio, sempre così. Para più piano nessuno sentirò, il nostro amore non più piano io te. Nessuno sa la verità, neppure c'è rodite guarda lassù.
Okay, that was great. Thank you, Randall. And something to start off our show with this morning. No, it's the Carol Cox Show here on K108 from 8 to 10 a.m. this morning. And what else can we do? Do you have another song you can sing for us, Randall, while we wait for Carol?
This is
by the way, what was the name of that song that you just sang?
Parla più piano. Uh-huh. That's from The Godfather, but that's the Italian version.
Okay.
I hope that doesn't signify something about this show, The Godfather.
Oh, no, it's the song
to deal
with. Yeah.
By the way, during the show also, Randall here, he's going to be singing opera.
It's more that tone of voice.
The tone, okay. Okay, well, anyway, it's in a cappella, and I hope you enjoyed the first song. Let's do another song while we wait for Carol.
Okay. I'll try this song. I'll attempt this song. It's called The First Time I Ever Saw Your Face by Roberta Flack.
Are you going to sing this in Italian?
Yes, it's called La Prima Volta.
All right, great.
And Paul Potts does this song. So a lot of the songs nowadays, they remake the songs and they write into Italian, like El Divo. They do a lot of that as
mm-hmm.
well. And I just found it very fascinating to sing. So this is La Prima Volta. It goes like this.
Okay, go ahead.
I'll sing two verses, okay?
La porta che ho visto riorviso turbar e natire a sorrer negri riorchi di rurare di esterre questo piorore ver si ferire morì di riarmor l'arvorta trova cirior tremora terior e troriar non l'armigliano nel bar diventò prigheria neria turba di armore.
Welcome to the Carol Cox Show, and glad to have you here. That was Mr. Randall
Caniva.
We'll talk later. I just wanted to extend Randy an opportunity to come on and sing. I'll tell you the story later on. But a bit different from what we normally do, but there's nothing here that's going to be scripted. I have today Mr. Henry Curtis, Mr. Robin Kay, Miss Martha Evans, and another gentleman from Lanai, and we're going to be talking about the Lanai Wind Power project, the proposed wind power project. And as usual, everything has goods and bads, and we're hoping to get some education on this, and the four of them have substantial knowledge and actually have dealt with many issues. Henry is with Life of the Land, and Martha, you're with what's your organization?
Friends of Lanai.
Friends of Lanai?
Yes.
Okay, and so you're stationed on this island there?
Currently I am on Oahu.
And then you worked over there?
I was on Lanai for 34 plus years.
So you are... That's your home,
that's
basically.
That's my home.
So you, looking at this plan, I see you're quite concerned.
Very, very concerned.
So you're not a resident here who projecting on Lanai. You live there and you know the consequences of what you're concerned.
Exactly.
And we hope to talk about all of those. And we also have Robin Kay. And good morning, Robin. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Okay, hold on. We're going to patch in the other gentleman, and I'll allow him to introduce himself. Good morning. Are you there? Welcome to the Carol Fox Show.
Yes, good morning. Thank you.
Yeah, you have a speakerphone on? You have?
I'm on. I took it off.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, because we'll get echoes, and we won't hear all the good things that Martha and Henry say here. Anyway, basically... we hear about it, and this is a project being proposed, and I'm going to let them talk about it. And if we feel rushed, we have 2 hours. If they want to stay longer, we will do that, because for me, I'm quite concerned with many issues over there and some of the developments and the environmental impact statements. And so we're going to talk about all of that. So Henry and Robin, if however each of you will introduce yourselves and take it from here, and we'll just toss out some of the issues.
Henry, go ahead, introduce yourself.
I'm Henry Curtis, Executive Director of Life of the Land. We do not try to impose our values here to Lanai. If the Lanai community favors it or if they don't favor it, that goes a long way to deciding whether we should get involved. We're here because communities both on Lanai and Molokai are upset with this project. We personally think it's a bad project, and that's why we're getting involved in it.
And my name is Robin Kay. I'm working with an organization over here on Lanai called Friends of Lanai. And Friends of Lanai is opposed to this project without any reservations. We find it to be, for a number of reasons we'll talk about in a little while, just a poorly thought through project addressing the big challenge that we have in the state, but this is not the proper solution.
Mm-hmm. The other gentleman, you want to go ahead and key in?
Yes. Back in March of 2010, Lanai for Sensible Growth came up with a position where we oppose the wind farm because we do not see that the potential benefits of the proposed wind power plant outweigh the environmental, cultural, aesthetic, social, and economic impacts of the Lanai community. So basically... what Lanaians for Sensible Growth has been doing since then is providing accurate information, you know, to the community to educate them. We're not trying to persuade them one way or the other. We're just trying to provide accurate information so there's some checks and balances in terms of how the community views and ultimately makes a decision on this project.
When you say accurate, are you implying or inferring that there's been a practice of some of the parties involved are providing inaccurate?
Correct. You know, both with, especially with Kathleen Cook, I mean, the community and the Alliance for Sensible Growth has had a 25-year history dealing with Kathleen Cook, going back to when the project districts on Lanai were being developed. And back in the late 80s, memorandums of agreements were signed by Kathleen Cook and Lanai for Sensible Growth and OHA. And subsequent to that, there have been many conflicts because of not following through on these agreements. There's been inaccurate information or providing information on a delayed basis. So we just want to make sure that our community and the legislature also get accurate information so they can make an informed decision about this project and not just listen to HECO or Caspian Cove or DBED on this project.
Mm-hmm. Can I add something to that, Carol? One of the biggest pieces of misinformation, and Henry, I'd appreciate your comment on this in a minute, is this whole issue of the Clean Energy Initiative and the penalties for HECO if they don't meet these goals. The state set up some goals to get light off of its dependence on foreign oil. But what people are not telling anybody, what's clearly in the legislation, is that all of the penalties that the PUC can apply to HECO for not meeting these standards are waivable, if that be the word. They can totally be waived. So that the penalties, while they're really goals, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Basically, during the banking scandal, it was felt that the banks are too big to fail, therefore we needed to subsidize them by billions and tens of billions and hundreds of billions of dollars to bail them out. HECO is given the same status within Hawaii. It is too big to fail. Therefore, while you might say you'll penalize them, and while you might give them a small penalty, as the Department of Health just gave to HELCO, the penalties are very small and are designed to be simple, very light slaps on the face while encouraging the utility to do whatever it wants to. So the idea that there'll be penalties if they don't meet it is really shibai. The penalties are a joke here.
Martha?
Yes.
Any comment?
I'm not really as up to date on the penalties and so forth. My larger concern is the loss of archaeological and cultural sites in the Ka'a area. As I'm looking at some of my notes, I, if you don't mind, would like to share some information with you. This is an area, the Ka'a area includes many ceremonial sites, including the largest heiau on the island of Kaena'iki. Some of you know of the area called Garden of the Gods, which we know as Kiahia Kavelo. It is one of the most storied and significant landscapes on Lana'i. Its connection with traditions describing how Native Hawaiians were able to survive on the island of Lana'i. And so for me, you know, when developers look at this area, they see a desolate landscape. And yet here in cultural tradition, in oral tradition, we see that the area of Kiahia Kavelo was in fact one of the areas where we have records describing how Native Hawaiians were able to survive. So they see desolate landscape, dry, arid areas. We know that our kupuna for many years used this area as an area where they were able to survive. Going on, Lana'i was noted for purple-colored lehua blossoms. As the tradition of the area known as Kiahia Kavelo reveals, the Ka'a region of Lana'i, with the view playing to the eastern end of Molokai, the famed kukui tree grove of Lanikaula, and the islet of Moku Ho'oniki, is one of the great significance to the history of Lana'i, and it connects us with the larger Maui island groups. That storied landscape is what is one of the things that connects us with Maui Nui, so the count, what we refer to now as the county of Maui, what was known in ancient times as Maui Nui. And they're talking about taking parts of this area, up to one-fourth of this end of the island, and covering it with windmills. I cannot see the sense in this. It just totally is objectionable for me as a Native Hawaiian.
And Butch, how do you feel about all this?
Well, I was born and raised here, and one of the things that concerns many of the residents right now, obviously, are survival issues. I mean, there's many residents have been out of work for 18 to 24 months. Many residents have left the island looking for work. And one of the things that bothers me is that Castleman Cook is really pushing this project and pushing jobs. And What LSG has been trying to do is to inform the community that even if this project met all of the permits and the approvals, it'll be a minimum of 3 to 4 years before they can break ground. So that does not help residents who are needing jobs right now. And on top of that, even when they do break ground, they're talking maybe 200 short-term jobs in terms of constructing all the turbines, and long-term jobs maybe 20. And so it's not going to make a huge dent in the number of unemployed on this island, even if this were to be approved.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask.
So that's the kind of information we're you know, providing to the community and the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Carol, can I just, you know, just in case your listeners don't have a sense of scale for this, because I'm not sure that's been effectively covered in any of the print media. It's really helpful for people to think that each of the turbines that's proposed to be on the land Martha has described, each one is as tall as the First Hawaiian Bank building in downtown Honolulu. That's 410 feet. The company has proposed in their original EIS 170 of these turbines, covering, as she said, a quarter of the island. So picture 170 First Hawaiian Bank buildings on Oahu. And if you look, Hiko had prepared a map for us about a year ago that showed a comparable amount of land used on Oahu. And it would go, it would include Kailua, Kaneohe, all the way around to Ewa Beach as one-fourth of Oahu, with 170 of these incredibly huge turbines. Each turbine has a wingspan equal to a Boeing 747. So I just wanted your listeners to get a sense of, you know, we're not talking about one or two windmills here. We're talking about 170 First Hawaiian Bank buildings, all the power from which goes to Oahu. Mm-hmm. And all of the power would equal about 10% of what Oahu's electrical needs are now. So they take a quarter of the night to generate 10% of Oahu's electrical needs. We just don't find that to be very fair.
Let me ask, as far as jobs, is HECO proposing to take people from that community of Lanai and train them to work specifically and be the technical brain source behind this, or are they going to give them small jobs, temporary jobs, and then bring import the technicians and what have you? Is there anything proposed like that?
I'll take a quick stab at that. HECO, the way they're splitting up this project, HECO would really have virtually nothing to do with the project as it's built on Lanai, except for bringing the cable to pick up the power that's generated here. Mm-hmm. Kathleen Cook, as the developer, would be responsible for the construction and the jobs. And all the research we've done of projects comparable to this around the world and in our country shows that maybe half of the 20 permanent jobs that Butch mentioned would go to local residents, because the rest are going to be very highly technical, mm-hmm. technical jobs. So is there going to be any training for this? Who knows?
Now, Henry, either of you can answer this. Who's involved? Who's proposing the project? We've said it in some roundabout way, but who is actually proposing it? Where is the money coming from? And is it the shovel-ready money that they're trying to grab? Can you talk to that or any of this, the AAR?
Henry, you want to start on that one?
Sure. Technically, in the early years of the Lingle Iona administration, there was some confrontation with Hawaiian Electric, because Hawaiian Electric has served as a retirement community for the senior members of the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. And then after the initial confrontation, the Lingle Iona administration got together with HECO and said there can be an alternative way that will grease both of our wheels. And so they came out with the Hawaii Clean Energy Initiative, which was written by DBED and HECO lawyers in the back rooms, supposedly to offer pluses to both sides, whereas in reality HECO got the better deal out of it, because there are components that help both sides, but they're not tied together. So HECO can get their friendly stuff through the Public Utilities Commission and other regulations while digging in and fighting anything that doesn't support their activities.
Mm-hmm.
Along this way, HECO put out a request for proposal for renewable energy on Oahu. Now, you might think that only Oahu bidders could bid for it, but these two large corporations, First Wind and Castle and Cook, proposed off-island solutions to Oahu's problems. Normally, you would reject something like that, but the Public Utilities Commission tends to be a rubber stamp for many HECO projects, and they said, hey, there was nothing wrong with this process. So the idea is that these two large wind farms would supply power to Oahu, and Hawaiian Electric has always favored giant solutions rather than small solutions. For example, while they've talked about how you cannot add solar on your roof on Hawaii Island or Maui Island because the grid is just too saturated, they have no problem saying that we'll have these giant solutions, these 400-megawatt wind farms. We'll have no problem adding another giant wind farm on Maui. Their solution is always, let's reward the big guys and screw the little guys, because that's what we're used to.
Let me give an example of that. The estimated cost for this total project is $3 billion, and one-third of that would be the state share in developing the cable. Interestingly enough, that $1 billion, to Henry's point, if the state was to spend that $1 billion, they could put solar hot water on 166,000 homes on Oahu, or full photovoltaic on almost 30,000 homes on Oahu.
So when will this, when will it come online if it were to move at its pace, and when are they proposing to get this on? And let's say if it worked out,
Yeah, there are actually two answers to that, because there are many who feel that it's never going to come online, that it's simply a block saying we have all this wind coming online so we can't do any other renewables, and then when it fails, we won't have any. But assuming, as you say, optimistically, that it will come online, originally it was going to be 2015. Now, in both the Senate and House hearings, they're talking about the date 2020.
Okay.
Because you're going to do a programmatic EIS that gets done next year. Then you're going to do individual project EISs, which will take another 2 years. Then you'll do another EIS summarizing all of it, and that will take another year. So the EIS process won't end until around 2015. Then you have to go through all kinds of federal and state permits. So you won't actually begin digging in the ground till 2017 to 2019.
And again, just playing the old opossum here, when will the rail come online? Well, you know, they're not going to squeeze palm nuts and get the oil to run the train. So where are they going to get the fuel from?
Probably 2020 for both.
Oh. So anyway, Robin, Butch, don't hesitate to talk, because I don't want to miss anything, and there are people out there familiar with. But also, there was Robin. You wrote an article in Civil Beat.
Yes, sir.
Can you steer them to that? It's civilbeat.com. I know we're going to post a link to that.
Okay.
And the public can have a better source of information.
It's interesting, because there were four scoping meetings. Henry mentioned the multiple EISs that are happening. Traditionally, and please, all three of you, correct me if I get this wrong, but traditionally, on a project this broad, you would do EISs for each of the pieces of it. For example, there'd be an EIS for Manaʻi, an EIS for Molokai, and then an EIS for Oahu, and then one for the cable. And then there would be an overarching programmatic, or sometimes called the cumulative EIS, which would study the project as a whole. Well, for reasons unannounced to us, the state and the feds have switched this process, and what they're starting with is the programmatic EIS. And that's really interesting, because they've essentially prohibited the public from asking questions about or commenting on any of the specific components of this project. I was at two of these meetings. That's what the Civil Beat article is about. I was at the meeting on Molokai and on Lanai. And on Molokai, people got really, really angry, because they had so many questions, and the panel of the DOE and DBED kept saying, not yet, can't answer those, can't raise them, sorry. So the article talks about the communications on both islands, on our island, on Lanai. There were 23 people who spoke, and of those 23, only two spoke in favor of it, and they were both the union representatives, whose position here has been despite what Butch said, that there will be jobs out of this project. But everybody else spoke with great passion about this project and what it would do to the lifestyle, to our environment, and how much it would cost us in the state. So the article gives kind of an update on what was happening at those four scoping meetings. Martha, you went to the one on Oahu, is that right?
Yes, I did. I attended.
And was it as negative? Was the testimony as negative as it was on Molokai and Lahai?
There was a lot of testimony asking for information on other forms of alternative energy. What about solar? What about OTEC? What about so on and so on? And proponents for, there was a proponent for actually a nuclear powered plant for the island of Oahu. Most of the people made the point that it is not our responsibility, it is not Lanai or Molokai's responsibility to take care of the needs of Oahu. Oahu and every single island should be taking care of their own needs. Each island needs to be self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. So that basically was where the testimony was with regard to what happened on Oahu. Lots of questions about other forms of energy with a great push for OTEC because we have been developing that particular type of energy self-sufficiency for years on the island of Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. Henry, you're an advocate for OTEC also. Why is it being ignored by these guys?
Basically, an electric grid has to get most of its power from a firm, continuous source. And Hawaii can choose from biofuels, which we don't have, geothermal, which is located in Puna, or ocean thermal, which surrounds all the islands. So we have advocated OTEC as a solution. And interestingly enough, the utility loves it and hates it on and off over the last 3 or 4 years, meeting with a number of developers over the last 15 years, but is not willing to look at it in the alternatives analysis of the programmatic EIS, which is a federal mandated requirement. The federal law says you have to look at an alternative that's reasonable, even if A, you don't like it, B, your agency doesn't have the right to do it, C, you don't have funding, and D, there's a law against it. Now, in this case, there are no laws against it, but clearly the EIS has to look at these alternatives, and the programmatic EIS that came out basically said there are only two choices. We're going to build it with planning, or we're going to build it without planning, and that's absurd.
One of the things that if you'll excuse my French, Carl, pissed so many people off at these scoping meetings was that the EIS, the draft, the preliminary notice that was put out was so opaque and so devoid of information, and it was embarrassing that a government agency with our dollars would have put out something so poorly thought through and written. It was like they're saying, like, okay, you guys on the neighborhoods, you're pretty dumb, so we're just going to pass this through you, you know, just kind of lie down.
Mm-hmm. Now, DBED is involved in this to what degree, and are they providing any of the money, or are they just shepherding the money through speaking on behalf of the project to get federal money? And the Department of Energy, what's their role, if you could?
Henry, you want to?
Yeah. As money dried up in this state over the last few years, the DBED Energy Office, under stimulus funds, was entirely financed by the federal government. Then, with the drying up of the stimulus funds, suddenly the legislature has to figure out how to fund the DBED Energy Office. So part of this big get-together is trying to draft legislation figuring out how we should pay for DBED's Energy Office. And you may remember last year we passed the oil tax. The oil tax is not to support renewable energy. It's to fund the DBED Energy Office and to fund Hawaii Natural Energy Institute. So all this talk about how we're going to use oil tax to fund renewable energy, it's funding bureaucrats to monitor how we're doing.
Now, I'm sorry, speaking of bureaucrats, the recent appointment by Representative Hermina, how does that play? Is there any connection to this project, her being, or she being appointed to the PUC? Can any of you speak to that?
Lifeland takes no position on any administrative appointees or any candidates running for office. Mm-hmm. We note that Hermina Morita has a long history on energy policy and a long history on public pronouncements on the cable. She generally favors it, but we take no position on her appointment.
But you can have an opinion and an observation. I mean, if we're going to talk about the devils at the dance party, we need to, you know, I'm just curious in the manner in which she and the timing of it. And we, you spoke about the Democratic Party having the HECO, as you described it, was a retirement place for retired.
Right. The chair.
Or not retired Democrats. Or however you. I'm just curious. Is this part of this entire plan, or is it related?
For example, the chair of the HEI board is Senator Dan Inouye's attorney. So.
And who is that? Oh, well. So the chair for the
Hawaii Electric Industries, which owns HECO, MECO, HELCO, and American Savings Bank. So there's always been a very close tie. We've always had, I don't know, it's just been close.
So if we were sitting here where I'm from, it would be HECO, HELCO, and hell no.
I think you could vote for that.
But, you know, so you're saying Senator Daniel Inouye's attorney sits on as the chairman of this.
Oh. Right, and the rumor is that one reason the cable might come to the Kaneohe Marine Air Corps Station rather than landing somewhere else on Oahu is that a condition of Senator Inouye's support was that the cable would land on a military base.
Right, so that they could tap into it and have first dibs on the power.
Right, and part of that is you may know that Kaneohe Marine Air Corps Station was one of the last places to regain power over the last major blackout that hit Oahu.
Mm-hmm.
So this would be a way of getting power to them quicker. And also a way of providing security for the alternating current, direct current, huge facility that converts the power coming from the cable, which is DC, to the power which is needed on Oahu, which is AC.
And that raises a very significant issue for us over here, because the land that Mark had described is also a refrigerator. It's a primary source for state and local Lanai residents to hunt for axis deer and sheep, and for Lanai residents to fish along that coast. And there's grave concern here, has been from the beginning, that none of the agencies are willing to address that the military, because this becomes a military project, as Henry said, coming ashore at Kaneohe, the inverter station that would be on Lanai has to be near the ocean, which would mean that they would block access to that, as well as to the whole area. If this became a supplier of electricity to the military, and right now they are one-third of HECO's customer base on Oahu, so it's highly likely this energy would go to them as well.
Mm-hmm.
They could very easily close off this whole area, a quarter of the island, and, you know, say, sorry, this is like an airport. There's too much security needed for this.
For you out there listening, this is the Carol Cox Show. My guest, we're talking the big wind project over on Lanai, where they plan to install wind turbines to generate energy for Honolulu and Oahu. So what's happening, if you'd like to, I'm sure they won't have a plan of action or a call to action. What would you like the listeners to do, or what would you encourage them to do to voice their opinions for support or against? What would you do, and how would they contact you?
Well, that's good. There's a couple of things for people to think about. We have a website. It's www.friendsoflanai.org that has a lot of information about this project from the Lanai perspective. LSG, I think, is on Facebook now, Butch. Is that right?
Yes.
So you can find the LSG page on Facebook. But one of the things that would be really helpful for those who are interested now, there's a bill, there are two bills going through the House and Senate committees. They've just finished their first and second readings and are passed on. This is a bill that in the House, it's House Bill 1176, and in the Senate, it's Senate Bill 367, and they're pretty similar. And this is a bill that was written by HECO that essentially says HECO will pass on all risk and all costs of the cable to ratepayers in the state. And we look at this and we see it with incredulity because we, the public, were prohibited from speaking about the specific components of the EIS, as I mentioned earlier, and yet here HECO is moving this bill through the legislature that would establish a regulatory scheme, their words, for how the cable is managed. So people who want to know more, who are upset with this project, who think it's a bad idea, ought to call the members of those four committees that saw this, and you can look up those bills at the legislature's website to get the names of the committees and the names of the people on them, and call up their legislators or write a letter and say, no, this is out of order. This is crazy. Don't do this.
Mm-hmm. And one other way of getting involved, and this is whether you're for the project or against it, whether you have questions, whether you have concerns, whether you're just interested in learning more about it, DBED has an open comment period right now to March 1st, where you're able to express your concerns to them and influence what comes out in the future environmental impact statements. And I'm sure by contacting either the Friends or Linnaeans for Sensible Growth, we can patch in the address of that where you can send your comments to.
Do you have...
Go ahead, Carol.
I'll wait.
I was going to say, if it's something you could post, I will send you some of these URLs for your listeners to follow up with.
Okay, well, send them to Carol Cox, carolcox.com, or carol@carolcox.com, and I'll post it. Henry, how about Life of the Land? Do you have any website that you want to put up or any information there?
Ours is lifeoflandhawaii.org, www.lifeoflandhawaii.org. And this afternoon we'll post on the front screen where you can send your comments to.
That'd be great.
524-1080 is the number if you have a question for Henry Curtis or Robin Kay or Butch Gima or Martha Evans. And there's some issues here. This is the what if part of the show that I sometimes like to do. What if there was a Marine base that needed power? And what if there was a train, a rail system that's going to need power? And what if someone is proposing to put a turbine, a wind turbine field up? Would it be possible to stop it? Will the people be listening, making the decision, listen to the people on the Lanai or people like myself or Henry or Robin? What if is that really almost like a done deal? Is this yet another super ferry where they're going to shove it down our throats? So let's talk about that if you could.
Sure.
Out of the what if mode now, for you guys, you're a realist. I'm a superstitious.
Well, that's a really good question and a good lead-in, Carol. You know, lots of people say, "Oh, it's inevitable. Let's just let it happen." And I don't think so. I don't buy that at all. I mean, this, you know, you referenced the super ferry. The super ferry's gone. I mean, the governor thought it was inevitable, and the governor pushed it, and people on Kauai especially stood up and said, no way, it's not happening. And ultimately, the Supreme Court of this state said, no way, you cannot do this. And so that's a good example of how it's not inevitable. We can fight it. And, you know, I just want to give you a little insight to something Bush referenced earlier. Castle and Cook, I had a conversation with a gentleman from Castle and Cook about 2 years ago. And I said to him, okay, what happens if we took a vote on this community? And the community said no, clearly and resoundingly, we don't want this. And he said, you know what, it may take us longer and it'll cost us more money, but it's our land and we'll do what we want.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they think of us as serfs. It's just, it's a despicable attitude.
And to follow up with that, a year or two ago, as this was being bantered around in the Lanai community, a state official whose name escapes me right now said to us in a very condescending tone, you know, Oahu provides you with the base for all of your medical needs, the hospitals, the programs that people need in order to be cared for are all located on the island of Oahu, and they have made that available for your use. Therefore, this is the least that Lana'i can do for the island of Oahu. After all, we provide for your medical care. You can provide for some of our needs. I found that a totally despicable statement by an elected, or actually an appointed official. It was not an elected official, it was an appointed official. But a very condescending way of saying to us that, listen, Oahu takes care of you, so now it's your turn to take care of Oahu.
I thought you already did, because any good coming from Oahu to Lanai has a GET tax imposed on Oahu, so you're paying for our rail system.
Yes, we are.
Good point.
Well, I was on Lanai last year, and I think I bought a couple soft drinks and some crackers, and I think I paid for a third of the rail. So they're bleeding you, folk. I mean, I've spent more than $340 or $350 for the soda and something else. And so, how are you going to survive as a community on Lanai? Period.
You know, Carol. I think most people here who think about why they live here know it's a choice. We know that it's expensive to go to Honolulu. We know that it's a hassle to go anywhere. We know that all of our food is more expensive. We know our electricity is more expensive. But the trade-off of that is a lifestyle that's just irreplaceable. And it's a lifestyle that benefits this community for sure. But it also is something that Honolulu people, I hear this all the time when I go to Honolulu. Oh, gosh, you know, our neighborhood used to be like Lanai. Well, you know, if this disappears, if our lifestyle disappears, then Hawaii is done. It might as well be Miami.
Uh-huh. We got a question.
Carol, you brought up a good question, those questions about what if. And it's understandable why people would have those questions. Just in the scoping meeting the other week, what was a bit concerning was that there were no alternatives being researched. I mean, they were only focusing on wind power. And on top of that, the whole EIS process does not have, as part of the process, a no-go criteria. Meaning, if during the research they come up with certain information, they have no criteria to say, okay, this is a bad project, we're not going to go with it. The EIS process only has, they go through the process to get information and say whether it's going to have an impact and whether they're going to provide mitigation measures. There is no alternative.
Hey, we got a caller for you. Bob, are you there?
Yes, I am, sir.
Go for it. What's your question or comment?
Well, I'd like to mention some other alternatives to what they're talking about on their island and why they feel the way that they do about not in my backyard kind of attitude and despicable. Everybody's despicable. Anybody's attitude but their own is a wrong attitude. You know, they're focused on one thought only, and that's, you know, not in my backyard.
Who are you, when you say they, are you saying Hiko or the people of
Lanai? Well, everyone of the guests that you have there are all on the same page.
Uh-huh.
We can see that, but I would like to confront them, you know, if you let me. And I'm always, you know, generous in thought, and I got my stuff all written down here, so it'll be fast and sweet.
Well, if you you're up to it and you can keep it clean and all that, I'm sure they'll be able to strike back. So
whatever they like, sir. I'm just going to make a few points.
Well, go for it. Let's not debate it. Go for it. If you got it, to keep it clean and being nice.
That's no problem.
Go for it. Hello? I'm waiting.
No problem.
Okay, the drums are beating. I'm going to start up the trumpets. Are we going to do you need an introduction, or you want to go and ask the question?
I just wanted to ask a few questions and state a few facts.
Okay, the violins
are
playing.
No problem.
Go for it.
It's just like a regular phone call. I don't know why you're treating it so differently.
No. I'm saying you have the form, Bob. Go for it. Start talking. Ask me questions. Okay.
I'm informed, okay.
Okay.
Who do I talk to? I don't know. I'm talking to you.
Well, Bob, just ask the questions.
The question?
Well, okay, Bob, you called up and you say that they first of all. And I want to be careful to understand who you mean they. So you say they're all
every
in the same...
Every one of your guests, sir. This can,
okay, well then,
Bob. Yes, sir?
I would never hang up on anybody, but at this pace, look, I've invited you to see...
Well,
whatever.
What do I got to see? Well, I got to talk to somebody. I'm...
Bob, this is Henry Curtis.
Right.
Why don't you ask me a question?
Yes, sir. Talk to us, Bob. This is Robin Kay. Talk to me. What's your question? I'd love to hear it.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
You know, you people have to advocate a different energy source. You don't want the wind. How about if they were all solar panels laying low that you wouldn't see them in that same area? Would you be the same uproar instead of the 400-foot turbine, the wind turbines?
Bob, would you put the solar...
To the point where you will accept an energy source coming out of your island. You remember, that is not your land, sir.
Bob?
Yes, sir?
Would you support putting solar on every house of every relative of yours?
It should be a law.
We agree, and then we wouldn't need lanai.
Right, but that source isn't... So we got to fight for them things. Just like I like to fight for the volcano to use its thermal air, you know, the energy from there. The number one source, and the military is already doing, is the wind. That is the most reliable. The current that we have around the island, we can use that. There you go. That is the cheapest, the most long-range, the most dependable. Hey, I'm not for windmills where they destroy the view or destroy the island. But you know what? Them windmills could be taken down at just as faster than they were put up. The pads that they were on can be busted up, the concrete used for backfill. So they're not eternal, sir. So they may be here for now until you get the other stuff, like the volcano, which people are hoo-hoo about. And to me, it's just an energy source that's dependable for the next 100 or 200 years. And that volcano is still going to be alive. Don't you agree to that? Why are we... Yeah.
The cable that would bring the power from the Big Island to Oahu might cost $20 billion. Do you have the change?
I think he's hung up.
Okay. Anyway, this is a big deal in that to burden you with, or any of us, and demand that we explain and give the alternatives. Bob, you're always welcome to call, and I'll never alienate anyone, but sometimes those issues that you're concerned with, what if someone projected on you as you've done today with this panel? So everything that you have proposed, someone disagree with and tell you there should be, you'd be quite beside yourself. So this situation is, it's when the cards are stacked, it appears, if there's no public hearings, and that's part of the issue you're concerned with, right, guys?
Yes, absolutely. You know, Carol, there was a report that was done.
The phone dropped off. I didn't hang up. I was still talking. Then I...
Okay, Bob.
On the phone, sir. I would like to finish my conversation with the gentleman.
Bob, I'm going to... Here's going to be the Carol Cox rule of the day. You'll never find a more generous person on this planet than me with time on it.
So you mean I'm like...
Chill out.
Can't talk on the program? That's okay.
Chill out, brother. Chill out if you
I'm
want...
I'm sorry I wasted your time.
No, you're not wasting my time. Okay, well... That I don't have a list for keeping people off, but I think I'll build one now on that note. So, you know.
Now, I wanted to raise one other issue we hadn't talked about yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Go for it.
There's been very little conversation about the environmental impacts to this island. We've talked about lifestyle. We've talked about cost. We've talked about social implications. There are two very specific threats here. One of them is the federally endangered bird called Oahu, the Hawaiian petrel. And recently it was discovered that there was some significant nestings of these birds up on Manaʻihali. And in addition, when the company put up these meteorological towers that were to test for the winds, capacity of the wind out in that area, they found that this was the flight path through which the Oahu go out to shore. And so some of these studies show anywhere from 1 to 1,000 potential kills of these Oahu. Now, apparently, and Henry, please correct me if I'm wrong on this, apparently, even if you, as part of the EIS, you have to say, we anticipate X number of birds might be killed, and here's our mitigation strategy for that. It doesn't necessarily stop the project, but it requires you to mitigate those disasters. And my understanding of the mitigation is that they would have to replace on this island, not somewhere else. Replace may be the wrong word, but replace each bird that is killed. Henry, is that right? Am I saying that right?
Right. On Maui, First Wind did a habitat conservation plan where they outlined specifically what animals would be impacted and how they would replace the animals that were killed off. Sure. To my best of my knowledge, Castle and Cook has never talked about what endangered and threatened species will be impacted or how they will be mitigated.
Right. And the second environmental impact is, and Carol, your listeners need to know this. I don't know that it's common knowledge.
So, Robin, before we get into that, we're going to take a break, with that exchange early. Just hold on. We're going to take a break, come back for the second half. Are you guys up to staying? We can have as much time. And, Bob, you're welcome to call back, but just ask the question, make the statement. We're not here challenging anyone. We're trying to educate people and not entertain. So you're welcome to call back, but let's be civil. That's what this is about, civility. Anyway, we're going to take another break. I'm going to let Randy do another song, and I'll explain all of this later. This is not studio. This is something I think I want to share with Randy and the rest of your office. So go ahead, Randy, right quick.
The song is called Po Kare Kare Ana, which is a song from New Zealand. It's a traditional song, and the word song that is, when they go up and they sing it, and they started to sing in a soprano tone. So I'm going to go ahead and sing it for you. It's called Po Kare Kare Ana. Po Kare Kare Ana, te ka vai o vai apu, hui te atu ko ahine, marino ana re, te hine re, hoki mai ro, kama te aure, te aroha re, tui tui takureta, tuku atu takaringi, kia kiti tori iwi, raru raru anare, ler hine.
Stay tuned for the second half, the Carol Cox Show, right after the news on K108. Listening to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 AM K108.
It took me a long time to find out my mistake. It took me a long time. Long time to find out my mistake. It sure did, man. But I bet you my bottom dollar, I'm not fighting no more ball for snakes. Back in 1938, I started checking. I found out my downfall from 1938. I'm telling all of my friends I'm not back in no more fall for snakes. All right, now. I got to correct all of my mistakes. Oh, man, 1957. 7, I got to correct all of my mistakes. I'm telling my friends, including my wife and everybody else, I'm not cutting no more frog for snake.
All righty, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. The second half, and we're talking the big wind project on Lanai, and I have Robin King, Butch Gima, and Martha Evans, and Henry Curtis, and we are talking the big wind project at Lanai, Carol Cox Show. You can pick it up at carolcox.com, C-A-R-R-O-L-L. If you want to call in, 524-1080, just go ahead and ask a question. Be polite, and that's...
Hello?
Ask it. Hello.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Cox.
Hold on 1 second. We were in Robin, you were talking about the second environmental project, and called it. Just hold on 1 second. Robin.
I'll be real quick, because I'd love your callers to get a chance. But the other issue is that Lanai is the only island completely surrounded by the humpback whale sanctuary. And yet, there's not been much attention paid to this issue of what the cable's impact might possibly be on the whales. So two major environmental issues that need to be of concern to everybody in this state, the Oahu and the humpback whales. Mm-hmm.
So, caller, are you there? Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call, and good morning to your guests. My question is, why don't they build these wind turbines on Oahu? I'm just a layperson, but it seems to me that it would be financially cheaper, and also these wind turbines would fit in with the environment better here, because look at all the building that's going on, all kinds of high rises, and it's, you know, more cosmopolitan here instead of destroying Lanai. And that's my question. If they can answer, why won't they build those things here? And I'll take the answer off there. Thank you.
Thank you, caller. Either of you guys comment to that, or either?
There are places on Oahu that can support wind. We just got a new wind farm out in Kahuku. It's possible to put another wind farm adjacent to that wind farm. There is talk by Kamehameha Schools of putting a wind farm above Haleiwa, Kailoa. It's early in the morning. It's near Haleiwa. And it would be about the size, or it could be about the size of the two Kahuku wind farms. It's possible... Hickam Air Force Base is working on a wind site on their base for a smaller site of wind. Mm-hmm. And there are areas offshore by Campbell Industrial Park and in Aina Haina that could support wind. Or if you really wanted to desecrate Oahu, you could line the ridges from Kahuku down to Hawaii Kai.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the options here. But the approach that are being done here is, let's not look at what can be done on Oahu. Let's look at what we can do to another island.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's one of the things to share with the listeners out there. You take an airplane prop. We know that birds get, they're impacted or can collide with an airplane. So imagine if you've ever seen an airplane and the propeller's turning. You really can't see it. Well, imagine a bird migrating at nighttime, and that's what the shearwaters will do and return. They are active at night. They will fly in the evening time or early morning, and you will have a great impact. But I want to share also with the listeners regarding this bird population there that was supposedly discovered. I had the occasion to, I was sitting down, occasionally I'll sit at a bar and drink, and I'm sitting there, and someone that works for the DLNR, who had one too many or whatever, said, "Oh, Carol Cox, I bet you don't know about the new bird colony that we found over there. And but I can't tell you any greater details because it's supposed to be a big hush-hush." And I went to pursue it and start looking and start calling around to the DLNR, and guess what? An article appeared in the paper talking about this population of birds. Now, I had made about 14 phone calls to different agencies and entities inquiring about more details of specific location. But that's how it works here. And so I was chuckling, the fattening frogs for snakes. I played that song. Just this seems to be what's going on in the state. The bigwigs take the little taxpayer like you and myself and stuff us up and then serve us to the big businesses. So anyway, I don't know if you want to be the snake or the fat guy. That's up to you. But anyway, go ahead, Robin.
I'm just really appreciative of you giving us a chance to, you know, let Oahu folks, hopefully Oahu folks, learn a lot more about this project. You know, Martha's perspective about how valuable that land is, it's not just valuable for Lanai, it's valuable for all of us. It's not just valuable for Native Hawaiians, it's valuable for every person who lives in this state to know that this sacred place is still going to be available for them to visit and appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, LSG has been fighting for this community, and Martha's been a big part of that when she was living here, and we miss her dearly. But LSG has been fighting for this island for 25 years. And, you know, we have one company that owns 98% of this island that has an attitude that is medieval. And so we need to get the word out to Oahu that you can say no to this. It is not inevitable. Powers are arrayed for this, but there's a huge undercurrent here on this island in particular against it. One of the challenges we face over here, Carol, and all of us can speak to this, which Martha and I specifically, there's this undercurrent of intimidation that sometimes raises its head into very specific action. People here, even though you might not work for Castle and Cook, your sister works for them, or your auntie rents a house from them, or in some way our lives are touched by Castle and Cook. So many people are just afraid to speak out. And they're afraid that there'll be some kind of repercussions. And in fact, at one of the public meetings, somebody stood up and said, state guys were up in front. Somebody stood up and said, you know, a lot of the people in this room are afraid to speak. They're intimidated. And the state official said, well, no one's told me they're intimidated. So, you know, you have this challenge of getting public opinion out. That's why people on Oahu need to speak out about this.
Let me add something. There was a statement someone made earlier about wave action. I'm familiar with the wave action project. At Kaneohe Marine Base, they've attempted to have one there. Now, in that area that they've placed this apparatus, keep in mind there's a dispute. Even though the military say it's military land that's submerged there, there's a big dispute in the executive order. And then really, if one were to go back and look at it, I think one would find that it's not military land. But they have laid their claim on it, and our state officials won't take issue with that. And that project did not, it leaked, it had problems, and I raised the issue with the Navy, and by the way, we didn't even know it was in place until someone tipped me off that it was over there, and the concern was that it has an impact on turtles, the original design, as it pops up and down, slides up and down the cylinder. If a turtle went in, it would kill them, crash them, smash them, and on and on. And then you have leaking and the maintenance of it, so it's not all perfect, and we're not going to build a perfect world, but when you're putting a mountain of wind turbines, and I'd like to remind most of the listeners out there, if you remember, at Kahuku, they laid in disrepair for a long time.
The wave farm, the wave off Kaneohe Marine Air Corps Station, is not to us, to Life Land, the ideal wave energy system, because it does have oil and other parts below the water that are moving and can leak.
Mm-hmm.
The wave system that we prefer is an ocean links system, which has only water and a propeller above the water level moving.
Mm-hmm.
It's like having a blowhole with a propeller that over the hole, and as the air shoots in and out, it turns the turbine.
Mm-hmm.
Our concept would be using a blowhole where air comes in and out instead of water.
Okay.
And it would be located offshore. But with that said, the amount of wave action on Oahu would be at least
10 times the amount of wind energy from Lanai and Molokai. In other words, Molokai and Lanai could supply 10% of our needs. Our waves could supply 100% of our needs. And yet we're not looking at it. But like wave and wind and solar are all working part of the time, not all of the time. If you're taking a rail line, and there's a gust of wind, and there's a lot of sunshine, and waves, and you're moving, and suddenly the waves stop, the sun sets, and the winds die down, you don't want to be trapped between stations. So you need some permanent energy source, which is either geothermal, biofuels, or ocean thermal, or fossil fuels, to keep the system moving. That's why we're looking at ocean thermal as a long-term solution.
You know, here's what I fear about all of these projects. It's for some reason, each project always has its bugs and the things that, for example, this wave action. Some while back, I inquired, Ms. Thielen, Representative Cynthia Thielen, was active in this wave action, as we all know, and this, especially the one at the military base, and I was able to recover emails where, when I inquired, there was concerns that she had gone to Switzerland, and I thought there was special interest, but it wasn't public. So I asked for the information from her. She refused to give it. Okay. So again, upon inquiring of the military, I found that she immediately called the military and started flexing her muscles. So why is it that all of these projects are tainted with that kind of behavior, and yet they have an EIS process, an open process, and you come to get your 1 minute? Something's wrong.
I've often said the way to solve our energy solution is to have a giant public table. And anybody can sit at that table, but they have to provide an ante. An ante is they put on the table a plan to move us towards renewable energy, 100% renewable energy.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've presented your plan, you don't have to stick to your plan. It just allows you to sit at the table. Then you bring together around this giant table all the people who have come up with a solution. And then you have a public debate back and forth that's viewable by everyone about the discussions going on about how we move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, you're bringing all the ideas to the table, but you're keeping away all the pessimists and all the people who say we can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that public discussion would then lead to a much firmer solution where the public would understand what the options are.
Mm-hmm. Butch?
Yeah, Carol. I think that first caller that was concerned about the so-called NIMBY attitudes, you know, the Lanai for Sensible Growth, if you, has always been about the community. It's never tried to totally stop development. That's the name, Sensible Growth. At the same time, the community dynamics over the last 25 years has been Castleman Cook coming up with a development. It hasn't worked too well. First came the hotels. Then they said, okay, we need the golf courses. And basically started handcuffing the community, saying, you know, if you don't agree with this, then you guys are going to turn out like Molokai. Then the next big development was the luxury homes. So there's been a series of business moves, a lot of them, I think, ill-conceived, and the community was, in a sense, held hostage. Lanai for Sensible Growth, again, is trying to provide that checks and balances and providing accurate information to the community and trying to at times be the voice for those who work for the company that can't or don't want to speak up. Mm-hmm. And it's been a tough 25 years having to live under this type of relationship with a one company town. So I think that's another thing that Lanai for Sensible Growth is trying to do, is educating people on Maui, people on Oahu, and people in the ledge about this dynamics, because it is something that the community lives with day in and day out, mm-hmm. and they don't feel like they have a lot of control. There's a huge power imbalance, you know, within the community. And friends of Lanai and Lanai's for Sensible Growth, I mean, we got our work cut out for us, you know, trying to take on the big three, Eco, Castle, and DBED. You know, Robin and I were talking yesterday about this policy issue of the Clean Energy Initiative, and it's somewhat misguided, because 70% of the fossil fuel in Hawaii is used for transportation, and yet there's all this push to decrease fossil fuel use for electricity generation, which only makes up approximately 30%. You know, so from a policy perspective, I think we need to look at more of that 70% for transportation use of fossil fuel.
You know, I want to speak. You got a static there. You're there, Butch. Anyway.
You there? Is that better?
Yeah, I think you got some static. Anyway, try call back or do something with that, because it's bleeding over.
May I share with regard to what Butch was saying? I really want the people in the state to understand exactly what Butch is talking about. The members of Lanaians for Sensible Growth, those who are willing to disclose their names, and I have been a member of Lanaians for Sensible Growth since its inception. Most of the members who are willing to disclose their names are not employees of the company. They are state employees, county employees, employees of those businesses with very few ties to the company. You have to understand that when, as a founding member of Lanaians for Sensible Growth, we challenged the company on their developments, people who were thought to be members were actually threatened by company officials with regard to their involvement in the objection to the plans. So much so that with the second memorandum of agreement came an agreement that began with the spirit of aloha and basically spelled out the fact that the company would no longer, I don't want to say intimidate, but that the company encouraged free speech and encouraged its community members to speak out with regard to their concerns for development of the island. So please, people, understand that this is the kind of community in which the citizens of Lanai live, that even though there is that agreement, we need to constantly remind the company at public hearings and community meetings that indeed they did sign an agreement encouraging our citizens to speak out with regard to their concerns.
So are they speaking out?
Oh, yes. I mean, the fact that there were 100 people in the cafeteria at the scoping meeting and one-fourth of them testified publicly, including, which was amazing, three or four company employees, actually one in a uniform for the company at that day, was mind-boggling, because it just doesn't happen here. As Martha said, you know, people, the LSG list, membership list, was anonymous list for years, and there are, you know, there's some talk about some lawsuits over here against this big wind project, and part of it is assuring people that they will be anonymous if they participate in these lawsuits. Let me give you a very specific example without naming names, because they don't want to share this publicly. But to Martha's point, just recently, in a conversation between the company and one of the company's renters, it was made very clear in an oh-so-subtle way that renter's family needed to take a sign down from the front of their house that said no windmills. So it still happens.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned the big three. What about the remaining, the little guys? What is the Shots Abercrombie, or Abercrombie Shots administration? How do they stand on this? What about the legislators? Are they doing anything to make it more transparent? Are they being sensible? Because we have the rail that's coming. and it's going to tax us. What about this?
Carol, let me address the ledge quickly, and maybe Henry can shed some light on the governor's position. But with the ledge, with these two bills that I talked about earlier, the HECO bills for the regulatory scheme, that's the first formal opportunity for the legislature to take a position one way or the other on the beginnings of this cable project. Mm-hmm. And despite 50 submitted testimonies from all over the state, only one of which was in favor, and that was from HECO itself. Despite all that testimony, despite calls and letters, the four committees, the two in the Senate, two in the House, that reviewed this language approved it. Mm-hmm. So is the legislature listening to the community? I'm not sure about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, the legislature is a very, very funny animal. If you take identical bills in the House and the Senate, each body can pass out their own bill. The two bills cross, and then each body can kill the other person's bill, so that the Senate will kill the House bill, the House will kill the Senate bill, even though the House voted for the House bill and the Senate voted for the Senate bill, and they're all the same thing. So there's a great deal of gamesmanship that goes on where you protect your own and you kill the other person's stuff. And if we look at the Senate vote in particular, very few senators, two senators voted yes on the proposal. The others were yes with reservations or no's or being excused. So right now, the Senate looks like a place where we can have a major impact on what emerges, because the bills will no doubt, if anything survives, they'll go to conference committee, and the Senate can either get them gutted or put in really strong legislation to promote the community. We should remember that the House, a few years ago, wrote a bill and passed it out of the House that would basically exempt Castle and Cook from most environmental impact reporting requirements. It was killed in the Senate. And therefore, the Senate is where we have the strength to really bring about meaningful reform. So those people who have connections, personal connections with senators, should call them up or write letters to them or email them saying that they have concerns.
Mm-hmm.
As for how the governor feels about this, I don't know if he's publicly made announcements recently about this project.
Well, he needs to make one. We'd like to maybe ask him. Robert? Butch, any? Hello?
Go ahead, Butch.
Well, when they came over to after the election, my understanding was that it was hard to read. It was kind of a neutral position, but at the same time, very subtle in terms of wanting to, you know, respect the community and its needs. So I don't think you wanted to take a stand this early. But in terms of the legislature, our state representative Nellie Carroll has come out against this project. Our state senator, unfortunately, is, from my perspective, is leaning towards this project.
And who is that now? When you say
Kalani English.
Okay, so he you think he's leaning for the bill, for the project?
For the project, yes.
I see. Well, you know, one of the things that I've observed here in the state, they take the people, the communities, and they project on them this NIMBY, and it can be abused, because in Los Angeles or bigger cities, there are people that won't live in Los Angeles, but they live in the suburbs. And they come to work every day, all the grinding and the machinery and the building and what have you. But if you propose to move a train station to Calabasas or somewhere like that, you'd hear them screaming. So, but here in Hawaii, if little people, and I don't mean that in a negative term, but the smaller people that are not, if they speak up and say, not in our backyard, because we know what it presents and represents, we then look at them as if they are evil. And if you don't fend for yourself, who is? It's clear that in these situations, when you're proposing to put up, there is a picture you sent me, Robin, of a you had it, but 400 feet tall, you say, the
Yes, sir.
Now, you can see that it was, I don't know, an artist's rendition or what have you, but imagine being out there, and those turbines also have a lot of fuel and hydraulics, right?
Yep.
And so they have to have maintenance, and you're going to have to build roads, and what's going to happen to service those roads and the runoff. And we're always talking about killing of the reefs here in this state and what have you. So sediment runoff and on and on and on. But anyway, for those that are out there that think that NIMBY is a bad word, well, it can be a bad word and it can be a good word. So if
you know, there was an article recently, I think this came from you, Henry, that showed that one of the studies of wind on Oahu showed that Black Point was a strong site for wind, and I thought, you know, let's see if we can get Oahu. What would the people on Black Point and the Kahala area think about putting one of these suckers in their yard? Would that be NIMBY?
Yeah, that would be NIMBY. Yeah, Black Point has a great wind site both onshore and offshore.
Hey,
and
well, let's put a couple there.
And if you look at the Ainihina coast. And Lifeline is not suggesting this, but if you look at the Ainihina coast, there's a shallow reef and there's shallow ocean all the way from Black Point to Waikai. Mm-hmm. You could put far more wind there just off the coast than you could put on Lanai and Molokai combined.
Sure.
Now, no one is suggesting doing that, and no one at the company, HECO, is saying, well, NIMBYism is bad. Why don't we look at that site?
Right.
Rather, they're saying, we have chosen another island, and it's NIMBY for them to fight it. Now, if you look at Class 7 wind sites around Maui County, there is far more on-land Class 7 wind sites on the area near the wind farm, the Ma'alaya, heading towards Lahaina, going up the mountain. There's a vast area that could supply perhaps 10 times what we're proposing for Lanai. No one is suggesting putting it there. Rather, HECO has chosen a couple sites and said, it's NIMBY if you oppose them there, but we will not look at other wind sites that are better because we have chosen not to. And that is real NIMBYism.
Well, there's a caller here. You got a caller, you got a comment or a question?
Yeah, I have a comment. One of the things I think Robin said was, you know, why should everybody care about this? And not only because Lanai is a special place, but because of the public infrastructure that's going to be needed in order to make this wind thing happen. I mean, there's going to be harbor improvements. Do you think the wind company is going to pay for that? I don't think so. I think it's coming out of everyone's pocket. So it's something that we all have to care about because we're one archipelago, and we need to care about each other. And before we start despoiling other islands, we need to start looking at what we can do to make Oahu self-sustaining energy-wise. And we can do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Robin, anybody comment?
Yes, no, thank you.
Thank you, caller.
It's a great comment. We really do need to look at this on a statewide basis and not just keep dumping stuff on the neighbor islands.
And if you look at Lanai, right now we have a small harbor or two there and some roads that are very narrow and very uneven, and they have some sharp curves. What this project would require is a vast expansion of the harbor and a building of a highway from the harbor to the wind site. Once you do that, you open up Lanai to all sorts of development possibilities, and a programmatic EIS is required to look at the cumulative impacts, and the EIS has chosen not even to consider what will happen to the harbor. Can you imagine the harbor on Molokai becoming a international harbor that can handle large ships so we can bring in large windmills, and then straightening the road and building a nice highway to the west side of Molokai? Can you imagine tourists who can come from Oahu to international harbors on Lanai and Molokai and then use their beaches to relax on? All of that
are possibilities that will result from the transformation of the islands from just the infrastructure needed to handle building these projects?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the biggest problems that I find with this entire process of introducing these projects is that they all have the same ring of sustainability. We have our mayor talking about sustainability. We have our governor talking about sustainability. We have HECO and others talking about sustainability. But they're not, the only thing that's being sustained is the pace that they work to try and introduce these projects without giving greater scrutiny and asking the big question, do we need it and will it work and how much will it cost?
And can I just interject?
Yeah, go ahead.
In about 2001, the legislature funded DBED to study the carrying capacity for the state.
Mm-hmm.
And DBED set up the sustainable, they went back a year and worked out the kinks in the back. And what they came out with was the Sustainable Tourism Study Group. And I served on the community advisory group on that. And what the study was looking at was not the carrying capacity of the islands per se, but at which point down the road different roadblocks would need to be shifted or mitigated in order to allow tourism to have rampant growth over the next century. And so it was all about how to sustain tourism. And growth is not sustainability. If you constantly have to grow, you're not sustaining anything, you're growing.
Right, and but we let these guys enter the hallways and on the podium, and they so easily, it flows from their lips, sustainable economy, sustainable this, and when in fact the only thing that's being sustained is the taxpayers reaching repeatedly in their pockets and digging out and putting toward a project that It can't work, because you place, why would you build an extension cord from here to Lanai? I mean, you lose the energy and that kind of thing just in dissipating. And what does it do to the whale population? What does it do to marine mammals? But again, it's simply, at the end of the day, it's one entity is going to make money. That's it. And then that entity is going to hire the news reporters to come in and become the public relations people. And then the public relations people are going to fend off you and me to keep from getting and asking questions. No EIS. DBED is not going to do and open their books. And it's a big mess. And what should happen? The public, when they say, not in my backyard. Lanai is your backyard, Oahu, because where are you going to go? Run off to Vegas and relax? You can go to Lanai and sustain and support that economy. But again, things are dwindling away, and our leaders are not standing up, and they're just throwing us out, as I say, frogs, fattening frogs or feed snakes. But anyway, Robin or Butch, you there?
Yes, sir. Excuse me. Carol, I got to go. I got to go check on my elderly mom. I want to thank you for this opportunity this morning for sharing all this information with our viewers, with your listeners, I'm sorry.
And then,
so before I go, Robin, maybe you want to mention that one comment from that Molokai scoping meeting?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Butch. Well,
okay,
thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I thought, thanks, but at the Molokai scoping meeting, and it was in the Civil Beat article too, but one of the most wonderful comments I heard was this Molokai person who stood up and said, you know, Molokai has a real water problem here. We don't have enough water. But if we ask the Oahu to build a tunnel and send us their water, that really makes the point for me.
Mm. Well, I don't think Lanai won Oahu's water. As many sewage floods we have here, man, I... No, we don't... Nothing. I won't say this is a public radio. Good morning, caller. You have a question or comment?
Yeah, I've been listening to the show regarding, and this is all has to do with energy. For me, the most abundant source of energy, and it'll be here for a long time, is oil. Mm-hmm. Now, everybody wants to get away from oil, and the second most efficient source of energy is nuclear. I have relatives who work in the nuclear electric plants in Virginia. They've been on 30 years. An aircraft carrier has a nuclear power plant that lasts longer than the aircraft carrier can be in existence. Mm-hmm. And it's so compact. Nuclear is the way to go if you want cheap power. Of course, oil, we've got oil forever. We've got sources of oil that we haven't even tapped. Now, they talk about electric cars, but sure, you use electric cars, but you need grease and oil, too, for lubrication. Oil is needed in so many other parts of our lives, in medicines, in plastics, in asphalt. You're going to have to use oil from time immemorial.
Well, you could.
Wind farms, they're ugly. We tried it in Cahokia years ago, and they went out of business. Like the man said, we've got these reefs just out of Kahala and all there, where you could put hundreds of windmills there. The wind's always blowing there. It blows on, you know, I golf at Wailea sometimes, off blowing wind there. But to me, wave power, wind power, wind power, windmills take a lot of space. Space is premium in these islands. Even solar power, they start building these solar generating units. It takes acres and acres to put these units here on the land. You know, it takes enough space on the rooftop.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, I go for oil and I go for nuclear. Oil will be around. We haven't even tapped the oil resources in the wasteland of Alaska, and then I'll let you go on that. Thank you.
Ed, let me ask you, how much oil do we have here in Hawaii? There? You see, this is, everyone says we should use oil. And, again, how much oil is found here? We have no problem with going and to find it all, you're going to have to be in someone else's backyard. And we're stuck on this thought that what is right now is permanent.
Right.
The machinery. There could be new development, new designs not requiring the types of lubricants and all kinds of things, gearing mechanisms and rearranging the gearings. But this is the mindset we can't let go.
Yeah, 20 years ago, we had no internet, no Facebook, no MySpace, no Android operating systems for cell phones. We were all on call-up phones, and we were disconnected from each other. We had no Twitter, none of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been very easy to come out with a 30-year master plan that talked about how we were going to put phone booths on every corner of every state and every nation within the next 30 years. And the technological changes have eliminated the need for any landlines whatsoever.
Right.
So,
which translates into no insulation, no copper wiring, no metal, no trees being cut, and people can't, but we get stuck on, but right now oil is the best thing, and nuclear is the best thing, when in fact...
And oil, if you look around the world and you look at only oil that's technologically feasible for removal and cost-effective for removal, in the history of the world, there are about 2.5 trillion barrels of oil. We've pulled at least half of it out. We will, at this rate of consumption, use up the rest in the next 3 to 4 decades. If we don't start planning, as the amount of oil dries up and as demand rises, supply shrinks, demand goes up, prices go up, it is expected that we will have very high energy costs very soon, which will destroy the Hawaii economy.
Mm-hmm. Caller, you there? Comment?
Sorry?
Got a comment, a call?
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Good morning, Colonel.
Good morning.
Aloha,
how are you?
This is Filippo.
Hello, Filippo.
Aloha.
Aloha.
I've been listening to this very interesting conversation here, basically. I just wanted to advise your callers to take a look at the term national continuity. Just go on the internet. Basically, it is FEMA is in charge with national continuity. If the government goes down, say like Egypt, then there is in place organizations that will continue the operation. It is basically a form of martial law. And it seems to be, I've been down there testifying this year. This year I've found it more than any other year that I've gone down there. Kind of reminds me of chickens running around after their necks been chopped off. Senate people running in and out of meetings. Chairs and of the meetings coming to the actual meeting, hearing you at late, and then leaving two or three times during that meeting. And we have people going to all different meetings at the same time. And it seems to be that they are purposely trying to dwindle down the opposition who are in these hearings.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult because you got to go there with 10, 20, 30 people. Mm-hmm. And you may have to go into four or five different conference areas. But this is what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they, if they had their way, they wouldn't listen to anybody. They wouldn't have any hearings.
Right. Oh, yeah, of course. I've watched
and,
that.
And remember this. National continuity is to martial law as what manifest destiny is to the doctrine of discovery.
Mm-hmm.
Keep that in mind, gang.
Okay.
Keep up your good work.
Hey, thank you.
God bless you guys.
Lord. I want to do one thing here. And as I say, this is an extended invite to Bob for call back whenever, however you wish to. But one of the things is I one comment was that we got the volcano. I don't fully understand it. I'm not going to try and speak to it and defend the Hawaiian belief, but are we treading on something when someone talk about going to the volcano? Is there religious concerns? Is there a, do you, you know, can you speak on that, Martha? Or, but I don't want to sit on this show and suggest that we will take and just blow the disrespect that, because that has been an issue, right?
It has been an issue, and I do know that there are religious concerns. I mean, the Pele Defense Fund over the years has expressed many, many concerns. I remember that whole series of events that happened all those years ago. I cannot speak for them, but I know I myself would be very, very concerned about the use of geothermal energy. However, on the other hand, it is widely accepted, I understand, in Aotearoa, New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
It is one of their main sources of energy, and I'm not sure how those people, those native people, have come to terms with the use of geothermal energy.
Mm-hmm.
I do understand, though, that there are many concerns.
But it's they made the decision. They weren't. It wasn't thrust upon them, I assume. It wasn't someone, well, we need to fuel a train and a military machine, so tap into the, you know, I think they may have had some
exactly.
choice in it.
Yes.
And the other thing to consider is that when we were planning geothermal power in the 80s and 90s, the idea was that you would build an overhead transmission line from Puna to Kauaihai, then bring an undersea cable onshore to part of Maui, offshore, then go through the Lanai Molokai Channel, and then bring it ashore on Oahu in Waimanalo, and build a massive substation below the Ko'olau Mountains. I think it was going to be called Ani'ani Substation.
Mm-hmm.
And this transmission line, if you think the Lanai Molokai transmission line is expensive, we're talking tens of billions of dollars here. A massive line, because the geothermal is at one extreme end of the island, and it's far away from where the population centers are.
Mm-hmm.
So you would need to build perhaps a dozen or two dozen industrial plants in Puna, and then bring it to Oahu.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are proponents of it. Kuakoa is proposing to take over Hawaiian Electric Industries and to power the state with geothermal. So for that reason, I think it should be included in the EIS, because someone has presented that as an option. And as an alternative, we should be looking at alternatives. I don't think that will pan out in the end, though.
Paul, are you there? You got a comment or question for in the panel?
Yeah, I just want to make mention of
the concern about geothermal has been used for years and years in Italy and other countries. Now, to use the excuse that the geothermal has been sucked the blood out of Pele, I'm an ecologist, I know, but I'm a realist. Did this land become sacred after the Tahitians landed on the canoe, or after they landed, they declared the land sacred? Was Pele here before the Hawaiians came, or after they came? This is my question. I'm pseudo-religious, but to believe in paganism, I do not. But
Hold on. Paganism. What do you mean by paganism? You're religious?
Worshiping an idol.
What about worshiping a man?
Man? Well, let's speak about paganism where you worship idols.
I mean, let's hold off on characterizing one's belief. I'm not going to sit here and use the airways in that fashion. I'm sure we could all ask. I think I could look at many religions and say that bad things about it, but not this hour, not this time. So.
Well, I mean, just the thing about the concern about geothermal.
I understand.
It's
geothermal and
Pele. Who's Pele?
But you're trying to speak to an issue that the other side isn't here to speak. If you like to. Would you be interested in I gather up some people and you come in and share it and sit and talk on air? I'd be happy to do that because it deserves such a service and attention, but not to just be so cavalier and sit here and throw out things because, you know, you're going to go tonight and pray to something, and you're going to wait for the results of that prayer. So, you know, when you speak and characterize things as being paganism, it has worked for some people and don't work for others. So that's, anyway, I'm not going to tell you what to say, but not today. Anyway, we're going to come down to the thing, and thank you for calling. And my anything you guys got to?
I just want to thank you again, Carol. This was really, hopefully, very helpful, and your listeners will have lots of questions and can check out Life of the Land's website and Friends of Lanai's website and LSG's and talk to their legislators and talk to their neighbors and learn as much about this as they can.
And again, your website real quick, and how do they contact you?
It's www.friendsoflanai.org, okay. And they can write to us at friendsoflanai@gmail.com.
And what can they do right now? You want them to do a call to action?
I want them to spread the word to their friends and neighbors that this project is not a good idea, that this project is incredibly expensive, there's lots of alternatives, it's going to destroy a quarter of this island for only 10% of the water's electricity. It's a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. Henry?
At Life of Land, we favor an informed electorate that learns about the issues and are willing to debate the issues in an open process. We feel that the more people who know about a process and are willing to discuss it, the better the solutions. And so we look forward to the debate. And thank you, Carol, for having us.
Anytime.
Thank you. And I just want to thank you also for this opportunity. And I want to encourage the people of Oahu, indeed the people statewide, to think about what they can do, what we can do collectively to reduce our energy use by 10%.
Mm-hmm.
What can you do collectively? Turn off a few lights, put a timer on your heater, think about using your oven when your microwave might do.
Mm-hmm.
Think about the things that we can do collectively to reduce our dependence on foreign oil. Think what we can do to make that 10% difference. And show HECO, show Hawaiian Electric Industries that we can indeed, as a people, make wise choices. Because when it comes down to it, it is about us and our consumerism.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, that's going to be it for today, but we'll have some more. And I'm going to put Henry on the spot here and ask him if he'd be willing to come back and talk about the mercury in the new light bulbs.
I'd be glad to. And the mercury in Kilauea.
Yes, and I would, if so, if you all would be willing to, and if you, in the next week or so, 2 weeks, if you'd be willing, I'd like, because I've been getting lots of calls about different companies and stores receiving these things and just dumping them when they're supposed to be conservation and they're not lasting. This is the allegations. They're not lasting as long as they had been representing.
This is a beautiful topic because we can put light bulbs, the volcano, and the telescopes on Mauna Kea all on one show.
Okay, you tell me when. And again, folks, this is not entertainment, and I don't want to tell anybody what they can say or can't say, but I just won't allow the offending one culture or another. I don't believe in that because we got enough nonsense as it is. So, anyway.
Thank you again, Carol.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Randall, I'm going to bring you back again later on. And Randall actually is a security guard down at Kahala Mall, and I heard him singing, and the voice is much better. These microphones don't give in this room in here. But I had to. I invited him because, real quick, how did you learn about this? How did you become familiar with speaking, singing in Italian and Italian? And
I heard it on radio, you know, through the computer,
mm-hmm.
you know, and on YouTube. I was impressed by this gentleman called Paul Potts.
Mm-hmm.
And he sang the Nurse Dorma, and he made my chicken skin on my arm crawl. So I started practicing it, and then the voice started just to come out. Mm-hmm. And then by following the inflections of Pavarotti and everyone else,
mm-hmm.
I just continued to practice it. And then some people through my work area suggested I try for an opera, but I didn't make the cut because I lacked the vocal mechanics.
Well, you made the cut because the bottom line is this is about a community, I wouldn't have the guts, and you sounded good that day when I heard it. And
I'm a bit nervous.
That, I know you are, but it doesn't matter. But I wanted to share with the community out there. Here, you they're working as a security guard, and he's around singing. So if you see this good-looking Hawaiian boy walking around, Randall, he'll ask him to sing a tune real quick. But anyway, I'm going to have him back, and I'm going to get him to record something and put it on that because, again, the studio don't present itself for and allow for good quality sound, but yeah, we'll get over the nervousness and shakiness. But anyway, thank you, Randall.
Oh, thank you ever so much, Randall.
Aloha, everyone. Thank you for joining us, and I'll see you next week.